brilliant young nobleman came to my attention. Even though disfigured by a laboratory accident, he was my choice to go into the world to raise a mighty army and to destroy the so-called human civilization which had driven us into exile. You were my hope, Cobra Commander.
A creepy science guy, a gun that hair dries.
Cobra Commander! Cobra Commander!
Acting out of spite, robots help him fight.
Cobra Commander! Cobra Commander!
A new comics run, new stories inside, a new universe that we have tried. Who will look inside?
Ladies and gentlemen, Talking Joe is on the air.
And nobody beats Talking Joe, an international podcast.
Hey, 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 it's me, Mark, coming to you live and direct from the Energon universe once again. If you are new to the show, you can find out all about Talking Joe over at the website. TalkingJoe.co.uk is the name. In today's episode, we will be looking at Cobra Commander Issue 1, released 17th of January 2024. And I will not be talking about it alone. I'll be joined by two people. Joining me as always, it's the most dangerous man in the world. It's Tim Finn.
Hello. Hello, Mark. And hello, listeners. And hello to our guest, who Mark is going to introduce right now.
Greetings. Joining us will be Sean Jordan. Who's Sean Jordan, you say? You may also know him by his stage name, Word Burglar. He's a G.I. Joe fan and a Canadian hip-hop artist. He mixes killer beats and lyrics with all things geek. He is best known to the G.I. Joe community for his massive album, Welcome to Cobra Island, which features songs such as I Don't Want to Go to Cobra La. Why am I bringing that up? His latest video, 1984, is a G.I. Joe filled delight. If you have not seen it, head on over to Word Burglar's channel on YouTube to check it out. It's taken from his latest comic book themed album, The Spinner Rack, which can be found over at Bandcamp and other places. Wordburglar.com is the website. Welcome.
Wow. I feel welcome. Thank you. And it's a treat to be here. I love the podcast and I love everything you've been covering with every different iteration of the Joe comics. And it's great to be back. Shout out Chief. I was here a few years ago. And really loving Mark and Tim, what you guys have been doing. So thank you. It's so fun. And so I'm so excited to be here to talk about a comic I'm actually very excited to talk about. So super cool.
Welcome, indeed. Great to have you on. On a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you feeling about the world of G.I. Joe comics at the moment?
Oh my goodness, this is a huge question. I can validate this, but I think I'm cautiously optimistic, but I think we are, without hyperbole, on the cusp of a really, possibly the best G.I. Joe comics age since the original Marvel run. Based on what I've heard, what I've read, what I've seen, and what I've taken out of what has been leaked, I'm very excited. You know, I've never stopped reading G.I. Joe comics, from the Marvel stuff to the Blackthorn 3D and Devil's Due and IDW and all of that. And I think, I have a lot of thoughts here, so I don't want to get carried away.
And even if the quality doesn't or couldn't match the original golden age of the 80s, just the volume, right? There are more G.I. Joe comics right now than there were in 1985 and, you know, 1988. And that counts for a lot. And they're good. But even if these new comics were pretty good, there are so many.
So many. It's a really good point, Tim, that we've got at the moment, we've got three monthly series coming out simultaneously, and I'm not sure if that has happened. Well, it may have happened before, possibly once or twice, but certainly not for any great length of time.
It happened the first year that IDW had G.I. Joe when they launched Origins, Adjectiveless, and Cobra. Although Cobra was a miniseries, but that special and the second mini happened pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I mean, I could just, maybe you could have gotten a G.I. Joe, a G.I. Joe Special Missions, and a G.I. Joe yearbook, maybe in the same month back
or
in the 80s.
Possibly versus Transformers. Yes.
Yeah, 87's the peak year for spinoffs, and then and there's the digests, and then like a year later there's Tales of, and I don't remember what year the Blackthorn stuff is, but yes, 87, 88 is a peak for the comics by volume.
It's exciting. I think IDW, there was a point where there might have been one a week coming out.
Oh, right, because they were doing movie stuff also.
And, I was working in a shop at the time, so I was there for all of it, and I always have been. And I got to say, a lot of it does not hold up, you know, in my humble opinion. For IDW, there's a lot of great stuff, and I'm not here to hate on anything, but the great stuff's really great, but there's a lot of stuff that I've questioned then, and I'm questioning now, looking at how Skybound is approaching this, and I mean, yeah, I'm very excited to talk about this stuff.
I wanted to call out as well that there was an article that was run on Bleeding Cool, which said that for the final order cutoff volume of orders for Cobra Commander 1, that reached 80,000 copies. So for a G.I. Joe title, and basically any title at the moment, that's a really solid number of copies being ordered. And this is just the Cobra Commander miniseries.
Yeah. I obviously Kirkman behind it is a huge, huge win for on every level. Mm-hmm. And I know Tim, you know, you're up on all the retail stuff, of course. So I defer to your knowledge. But when I was working at the Snail, when the IDW stuff was coming out, I would bet not a single IDW issue even hit that. And this was a long time ago in a different market. I would be very surprised if the IDW initial run was cracking 100,000. But I could be wrong. Like back then, our top comics would have been like Avengers, you know, a bunch of like Vertigo was still coming out. Maybe Why the Last Man crossed over around then. But I don't know what the numbers are, but 80,000 for a G.I. Joe comic back then would have been huge to me. So I could be way off. What?
And it's about 10 times the volume that A Real American Hero was selling back at IDW. So it's quite the jump.
Now, we have to remember that a comparison of Cobra Commander 1 with IDW, G.I. Joe, you know, 282 is not a fair comparison, because Cobra Commander 1 is something we've never seen before. The character's never had his own book. It is in issue 1. Mm-hmm. It's a miniseries, so there may be a different level of attention, and it's got many variant covers.
Absolutely. And you've got a killer creative team on it. Josh Williamson's doing great stuff at DC. He's been really building up his resume over the years, so I think he's a name that people trust. Mm-hmm. And but I was even thinking of like the G.I. Joe proper from IDW, not even Real American Hero, because I feel like the Larryverse is just its own thing and it always will be. And then whatever the other verse will be, whether it's the Devil's Due verse to the IDW verse to this new Skybound Energon universe, like that is like, okay, this is, we've got our Larry book. We're always going to have the Larry book, knock on wood. And that's amazing. So what is that other Joe-verse going to be? And I feel like with IDW, you know, obviously I'm a huge Costa and Gage fan. I think their Cobra work was phenomenal. Like, thinking of other standouts beyond the Cobra series that I want to go back and reread, like, there's a handful. Like, maybe, like, the Mad Monk stuff, like, David Lapham worked on. Some of the Paul Aller stuff I remember being really good. Not that it was really good or bad, but it's just, like, I feel like the proper IDW verse got off to a really rocky, confusing start, and Cobra was kind of the runaway success, and then I just feel like the rest of the there were a lot of missteps trying to build that universe outside of what was going on in Cobra, and it just made it difficult. Like, certainly I think there's some good like single issues and stuff, but the reason I'm bringing that up, and not to be negative, it's more to be positive about the outlook right now with Skybound. They have really thought this through, and they have looked at the stuff, to me, which has kind of always been there. You know, we can talk about Cobra Law and Sunbow, because that's huge. And I feel like Cobra Law is so inherent to the Sunbow world anyway, that, again, am I getting ahead here?
let's not rush ahead too far. So let's...
I can say one more thing since Berge was talking about early G.I. Joe sales at IDW. Mm-hmm. So according to Comicron from Diamond, G.I. Joe number one in 2009 sold 32,000 copies.
See, nowhere near this. And that was when the market was arguably even stronger.
Mm-hmm.
And that same month, that was the number 50 book, and the number one book was Amazing Spider-Man with 350,000 copies. But when you go a step down to the second ranking comic that month, that's another Marvel book, Dark Avengers 1, and that has less than half the sales of Amazing Spider-Man. So the month that G.I. Joe won... I'm not talking about issue zero. I mean, the Chuck Dixon number one launches at IDW. Diamond sales for the direct market, only four books are cracking 100,000.
Yeah.
Jumping back 2 years, America's Elite, as it's wrapping up, is selling, you know, like 15,000 or 16,000.
Yeah, I'm hearing a lot of buzz from retailers as well about the impact that this is having, that it's almost like you've got the Marvel Universe, you've got the DC Universe, and then the next biggest thing is almost the Energon Universe. It just seems almost unbelievable. So contextualizing ourselves, we are in what we're calling the Energon Universe. You can tell it's the Energon Universe because there's a little EU logo on the front cover, just below the Skybound logo. Looks like Cobra Commander is stepping on. This is the universe that started with Void Rivals, then sort of flowed through into Transformers. We've had Duke issue one last month. They've said that there'll be 4-5 issue G.I. Joe comics introducing us to some of the characters and the world, with the expectation that that might launch a ongoing. And so here we are with Cobra Commander, the next first new issue. And there has been a little bit coming before that that's kind of set some of these cogs in motion. So issue 4 of Transformers, there's been this mystery of Megatron hasn't shown up. But in issue 4, Optimus Prime replaces his arm with Megatron's cannon arm, and the last page of that issue features Megatron missing an arm and frozen into a glacier somewhere in some Arctic wastes. And it also that issue included a spoiler cover from Andrea Milana of Megatron in a quite close up of Megatron, and Andrea Milana significantly is the artist for Cobra Commander. So we've kind of seen little glimpses of Megatron prior to this issue where he does appear, and we'll obviously get into that. And I've not said it, but it's kind of explicit into everything we do. There will be spoilers. So if you've not read Cobra Commander yet, please do dive on into that, read it, and come back, because we will be giving a whole lot away. So the creative team behind this issue, we have got Joshua Williamson as the writer. He is basically the architect for all things G.I. Joe in this new Energon universe. He's also writing Duke number one. Andrea Milana is the artist, and Annalisa Leone is the colorist. Russ Wooten is the letterer. Sean Makowitz, Jonathan Manning, editors, and Andre Juarez, logo and publication design. I'll just pause there. Tim, did you have any did you have any editor's notes there or observations on Andrea Milana, the artist? Anything that we should be aware of?
Yeah, I'm reading from Simon & Schuster's website. So I think American comics fans have probably not heard of him and were sort of surprised or puzzled when the Cobra Commander creative team was announced. So Andrea Milana is a cartoonist from Rome, born in 1993. After graduating in painting from the Academy of Fine Arts, he entered the world of comics through self-publishing, to which he devoted himself for several years. His debut as a professional artist in the U.S. market is a graphic novel called Dahlia in the Dark, and comics fans, your comic book store can order this graphic novel from Diamond because it's published by Mad Cave. And the cover has a muscle car driving at us and some flying monsters and sort of a looming scary face with a glowing red eye are in the sky in the background. The cover is very blue and purple. But otherwise, I think Cobra Commander number one is the first sort of regular comic that American readers have read drawn by Milana.
Shout out to Mad Cave, by the way. I think they are very slowly building up some cool stuff over there. But Mad Cave Comics, that's cool. I did not know that Andrea got their start there. Awesome.
They've also, Milana's got an Art Station page, which is artstation.com/AndreaMilanaArt. And there are some non-G.I. Joe color character studies and sort of pinups and something that looks like a cover of an Italian book. And whatever words you use to describe the art style in Cobra Commander, it is on display here on this Art Station website.
Very good. And he does have some social media presence as well. So he's shared black and white / gray tone art process on his Twitter or X account, if you insist. So yeah, you can see some of the workings behind this.
Let's have a look at the covers in the gallery.
So this being a number one from Skybound, there are an awful lot of covers, Tim. So let's have a bit of a whistle stop tour through the covers, maybe just lingering a little bit more on the cover A.
Sure. Cover A is by the regular creative team, Milana and Leone. It's Cobra Commander emerging from green smoke with some jagged rocks that are also green, with a green sky and a full moon, and on the ground are some coiling green snakes, and Cobra Commander is sort of walking toward us, toward you, and holding a pistol. This is in his battle mask costume. But in the sky over his right shoulder is the Autobot Arc heading what looks like downward. This is sort of an unusual cover. There's a great logo. There's a great Cobra Commander logo up top, block red capital letter font that's slightly italicized. The Cobra insignia in it is not italicized. I think I'm okay with that. I feel like there aren't a lot of comics covers that are this green.
Can I just say as well that there have been hints that the gun that Cobra Commander might be Megatron in Walther P-38 form. So it's a little small, so it's not entirely clear on this one, but could well be a Megatron in gun form in his hand there.
Yes, good points. I own the original Megatron toy, and it's a little hard to tell. It could be it, but it certainly doesn't have the full what do you call the like backstop connection piece, and then the
stock.
Scope, the stock.
I interpreted it that way too.
That it is Megatron.
Well, because Cobra Commander's pistol is infamous, the one that fits on his back, the one that came with the toy,
the hair dryer.
So the fact that they're being very accurate to a lot of things, but they did not include that pistol. And then looking at it, it does look like a Megatron, like a very subtle, like it could be or couldn't be. But I took it to mean it was Megatron. I thought it was a nice Easter egg. but maybe not.
Cover B is drawn by David Aja, who's best known for the Matt Fraction Hawkeye. This is sort of a match with the cover B for Duke number one. As with that, there's a lot of white negative space for the background, and there's a little bit of Jack Kirby, although this time it's not in the figure work. It's in the machinery behind Cobra Commander, who's standing with a one arm akimbo and holding up another pistol. And this pistol is not Megatron. It's definitely not Megatron.
That's, Han Solo's pistol, whatever that one is.
right. Cover C, which is the 1 in 10 of ratio variant, is drawn by Chris Burnham and colored by Brian Reber. It's Cobra Commander, as we see him later in the issue, wearing his silver battle mask, but not the sort of blue helmet dome part, but a blue fedora and a blue trench coat out in the snowy mountains during a snowstorm, holding not one, but two pistols. And this starts to look like his blow dryer pistol, and then also the Megatron without any attachments.
And this one, the Chris Burnham cover, is actually an adjoining cover to one that he's done for number two, and the transition from one to two is very clever, and we'll talk about that maybe when we get there.
Cool. Cover D is the 1 in 25 ratio variant. This is digitally painted by Steve Epting. Once again, a gift for one particular Talking Joe team member. This is Cobra Commander in his battle mask uniform holding a pistol. This time it seems a sort of a fully invented pistol that feels a little sci-fi. And his right hand is up and out toward us. And behind him is a Hector Greedo 1982 style G.I. Joe explosion, where you can really see the brushwork.
Mm. It may even be the actual one that they've lifted as a background. He's holding an invisible globe with a snake wrapped around it.
when you say that they've lifted, I think they have digitally recreated a new one.
Mm.
Cover E is the 1 in 50 variant. This is drawn by Andrea Sorrentino, who's best known for Gideon Falls and Old Man Logan, looking at logos of Cobra Commander. This is a really unusual cover. This is a person, it's Cobra Commander, but cropped from sort of mouth down to mid-chest. So what you really actually only see here is a pair of gloved hands holding a snake sort of close to its chest or out to you a little bit, and an ascot tucked in behind those two signature Cobra Commander collar flaps. The ascot is black. And then based on where the logo is placed, I sort of can't see anything of the chin or mouth, which would be obstructed by a battle mask anyway. There's just a little bit of black background here. The lighting here says inside or at night, with just, you know, one dim light overhead. The snake is, I guess, staring right at us with a tiny glowing eye. And this is the sort of photorealism of Andrea Sorrentino that might remind you of Tim Bradstreet. You know, it looks very much like drawn from photos of real people, real objects, real fabric. Cover F is drawn by John Boy Myers, and this is the 1 in 100 ratio variant. This is, again, a match for same artist for the 1 in 100 Duke number one. This is, now we're looking up at Cobra Commander, who is definitely holding his blow dryer ray gun and flexing his fingers in his other hand. Behind him is Megatron's upper torso and head and some machinery restraining him. And this cover, if you're holding the comic in front of you, it's not quite chromium. It's not as glossy, shiny as chromium, but it's got that sort of foil. How would you guys describe it? It's shiny but matte at the same time.
Okay.
It's not shiny like silk or aluminum foil. It's sort of like the flip side of aluminum foil. Mm-hmm.
Mm. And this one was solicited as a spoiler variant because of the reveal of Megatron. And it acts as a kind of companion piece to a previous John Boy Myers illustration, which was for the cover of the IDW G.I. Joe trade paperback number 14, which reprinted the Transformers versus G.I. Joe crossover from the pages of 135 through to 145.
Yeah, John Boy Myers is one of the few artists who's now drawn for three different continuities. A cover for the Marvel reprints, covers for IDW's new continuity, and now covers for the Energon universe. Cover G is the blank sketch cover. It's printed on a thicker white stock with the logo and corner box and credits up top in gray, so you can have an artist draw on it, and then you can take it to eBay and sell it for more. I mean, give it to your friends. And then the cover, I have to Google this.
Cover H is the 1-250 David Mack variant.
Oh my gosh, I had no idea there were this many covers for it.
Which features Cobra Commander in a kind of James Bond style, sort of with his arm and his elbow in the palm of his hand in that kind of classic James Bond pose. Again, I guess hinting that maybe that's Megatron in his hand.
This cover is David Mack's trademark use of a desaturated, what I think is watercolor, but I don't actually know. It could be watered down acrylic or gouache. But so Cobra Commander is within the Cobra symbol, and then everything around it is white. And that David Mack very often paints one central character, sort of head and upper torso, and a lot of negative space. And white, or just sort of the like tone of the paper. And this one is also sort of a match for Duke number one. And then this is where I hand the microphone back to Mark to talk about some of the retailer variants.
I'll do a whistle stop tour of this. So first of all, we've got Bird City Comics John Gang variant. So it's a torso of Cobra Commander in John Gang's sort of very computerized-y looking style. Southern Comics Cartel Santa Fung variant, which is a sort of fun cover of Cobra Commander sat down in a red armchair surrounded by snakes in his old snake kind of garb. The Comic Mint Vincenzo Federici variant is a nice one again because it sort of references the interior of the issue. It's Cobra Commander stood up, releasing those insects to do some damage against an opponent. And then Wanted Comics, Rupps Comics, and JJ Comics and Art with Big Clutch has got a shared variant by Maria Wolf. It's available as a Virgin foil and standard, and that's got Cobra Commander in a similar sort of up from the knees in a typical Cobra Commander maniacal pose. Then we also have Eastside Comics Megacon variant, which I understand is meant to be an exclusive just for sale at Megacon Orlando, but doubtless it will show up in other places. And this is Cobra Commander, full body, stood atop a tank with a Cobra logo behind him. And then the final one is a retailer variant by Nimit Malavia, which is actually one of my favorite ones because, again, it references the inside of the book and is done with quite a lot of artistic panache. He's sort of stood in his old man snake garb with his big floppy hat. The snow is coming down and it is illuminated. The snow is illuminated in red, which sort of ties into that sort of horror vibe of the book, and it's illuminated by the sort of the lights of the vehicle that he's driving. That's in trade and Virgin foil, and I actually reached out to the people with this one, and I've got a special offer if you do want to pick it up. It is available from thecomiccupboard.co.uk is the people who have it in the UK. I think it's a shared exclusive with some US dealers, but I don't have the details for those. But if you do want to pick it up from the Comic Cupboard, you can use the code TALKINGJOE10, all one word, and you can get 10% off your order there. And that is the covers. Oh, okay, wait, it's not the covers, Tim, because it's done so well that last week they announced second printing. So we've
three of them.
They announced a Jason Howard variant, again, of full-figure Cobra Commander in a typical menacing Cobra Commander pose.
White background, just the Cobra symbol.
Jason Howard of Globulus, again, full-figure, similar sort of pose to Cobra Commander, but with more tail. And then Cover C is by Andrea Milana, that Cobra lineup that we are familiar with from the poster. So it features Destro, Cobra Commander, Mercer, and Zorana. At the same time, they announced a chapbook variant. We didn't get any details of that. And some people have said that it may not be a thing that actually happens. So don't have the details on that one.
You know what? So I'm on Diamond right now, and I see the 3 second prints you just referred to, and they're technically called Cover A, Cover B, Cover C. And then I do see a listing for a Cover D, but it's got the symbol next to it that it's not going to happen, and there's no image for it.
Right. Okay. So we're not expecting this one to actually happen. A bit bunged up. So it could probably sounding a bit like that towards the end. So we've talked about the covers. Let's find out what happens on the inside with a plot breakdown.
Plot breakdown.
At No Man's Land, a rest stop in the middle of nowhere in a desolate, frozen landscape, a stranger enters and asks in a sibilant voice for a vehicle. He takes his tracked truck from a patron, leaving a bloody mess in the snow behind. Blood in the shape of a Cobra logo. Cut to earlier. In Cobra Lar, strange land of organic structures, crops, and flying manta rays, a mob attacks a science lab, demanding answers on the monstrosity that is contained within. The leader of the scientists wants to protect his research, contained in a giant metallic safe. He is injured in an explosion, but is repaired by Cobra Lar's mysterious medicines, which includes a three-headed snake. When he recuperates, he has a freaky new eye. He is summoned by Pythona and given a familiar helmet to wear. Cobra Commander visits Lord Globulus, now dressed in his familiar costume. For his betrayal, he is to be killed by a trio of royal guards, but Cobra Commander releases some insectoid robots which kills the guards. He then convinces Globulus that he should leave with a new title and a special mission for the outside world. Before he sets out, he unlocks the vault, and we see the giant Megatron, who is shackled. And Cobra Commander reveals he has gained knowledge of the Transformers' galactic secrets. He vows to track other Transformers' energy signatures. Outside, Cobra Commander pauses, along with a disguised Cobra Lar referred to as Grunt. Cobra Commander has tracked an energy signature to a swamp shack in Florida. The shack has the word Dreadnoughts written on the door. ... to be continued.
Okay, so when Mark was describing one of those retailer exclusive variant covers, he used a particular word, the H word, horror. And I think that's a good place to start, because to both of you, what do you think about this approach, this genre? Because we haven't seen this before in G.I. Joe.
Well, you know, at the start, you mentioned I have a song called I Don't Want to Go to Cobra Lar. That was me. I love Cobra Lar. And to me, as a kid seeing that movie, it flipped everything I knew on its head. I've always loved the Larry Hama comics. I love the real world military. But the Sunbow universe always had that superhero vibe. And to me, this whole Energon universe that's being built, starting with Void Rivals and now Transformers and G.I. Joe, it's kind of like the ultimate, or maybe like the max version of the Sunbow universe. And when I first heard Transformers were going to be in the same universe as G.I. Joe, you know, there's a few ways this could go. And to me, Cobra Lar has been sitting here untouched, waiting for someone to finally do something with it. Full disclosure, I submitted a pitch years and years ago. I don't know if anyone ever read it, but I sent it to two different editors at IDW and never heard back. And it was about Cobra La. And it was a sequel to Worlds Without End, set in the Sunbow universe, if you're familiar with that two-parter, where Cobra rules the world in an alternate reality. And to me, the natural evolution of that plot line is that if Cobra rules the world, that means Cobra Law's right around the corner. So that was my comic pitch, and I've still got it if anybody's listening. I drop nuggets in a song, but...
And those editors didn't need to take your pitch because Tim Seeley was already using Cobra Law. Oh, no, that's Devil's Due.
Yeah, so, and I love that Tim Seeley.
Right, okay. In Black Horizon. All right, I'm sorry. My timing's off.
No,
please continue.
No. It's cool. Like, I've always felt like Cobra La, again, I love both universes of G.I. Joe, and it's kind of like what we were talking about before, there being a different universe. So the fact that this is a horror book with Cobra La in it makes perfect sense. I'm excited someone's used it and approached Cobra La. You know, they touched on it briefly in the Cobra series in IDW, but they made Galobulus more, it was like a cult leader, and there was that thing. They didn't really touch on this like ancient snake civilization, which to me, if you're in this world, like Cobra La, I've never understood the hate that people have for it in the Sunbow universe, because that's a universe that gave us Destro's family with a Cthulhu monster in the basement. You had Airborne's brother was like, had these crazy like X-Men mutant abilities. There were dinosaurs. There's an episode where they travel through a portal in ancient Egypt and meet like Osiris and these ancient mythological Egyptian gods. And I could go on and on. There's dinosaurs, there's time travel, there's mutations, the Synthoid conspiracy, there's alternate realities. Like the Sunbow universe, Cobra La fits so perfectly into it. And the fact that we're only now getting a creator with the vision to say, okay, this is how we can make it work. I mean, and knocks it out of the park. This is how you use Cobra La. I know we've only seen them in one issue, but acknowledging their existence right now, this early in our introduction to the world of this skybound G.I. Joe world, it's perfect, because then it just lets everything else come. I mean, Zartan, is he going to have Transformer technology? Is that how they're going to explain him? I mean, everything else I think is just going to flow out. And if people have aversions to Cobra La, like, you know, everyone's saying, oh, this is such a controversial thing that they're using Cobra La. I'm like, no, this to me is like, it's been here all along. And my last note is what I really enjoy about Duke and Cobra Commander so far, they're being helmed by, you can sense that the people respect these characters and the stories and what has come before, and they love them, and they want to push them forward well, answering these, all the challenges they have about how does G.I. Joe work in 2024? Like, who cares about it? Like, to me, this actually feels like finally a G.I. Joe universe that maybe a younger generation could get into. We all see Kirkman with Invincible doing so well in the animated series, and you know, he always had G.I. Joe references, from the Lizard League to Mercer being a character in Walking Dead. I don't think it's a coincidence that Mercer's one of the first Cobra characters we meet now. I feel like Kirkman is like, loves Mercer. That's, again, another tangent. Like, we need, you know, people under 30 to get into G.I. Joe. I mean, let's be honest. And Invincible is blowing up. And if Kirkman and the Skybound universe handle this properly, there, I don't see any reason why this could not be pushed into, like, the way Kevin Smith has been handling the Masters of the Universe cartoons on Netflix. Like, this type of stuff is what me, like, 8-year-old me, is like, yes, this is makes perfect sense. Anyways, rant over. I love it. I'm excited. I think it works perfectly. And I'm so glad that they have... that they've acknowledged this. I mean, people get feelings around Cobra La. I was at JoeCon talking to people when there was a rumor that they were going to do the figures in the modern era, because they did a Nemesis Enforcer, and there was a rumor there was a Galobulus right around the corner. And I was like pushing the club to do a Cobra La set. And they did a Pythona, of course. But, like, I don't know. Like, if you like Sunbow, you kind of have to accept Cobra Law, because it's the evolution of the craziness of that world. Thank you for hearing me out.
No, that was good. I want to offer not a fact check, but just a little reflection. I appreciate that you consider Joshua Williamson a creator with the vision to go there. It's also possible that, you know, like Kirkman and Joshua Williamson and like the editor's like, you know what? I think the time's right for Cobra Law. Or there may have been editors at IDW who said, no. Or someone at Hasbro, like, no Cobra Law. Also, I think a good reason to do, this is sort of my central thesis for Cobra Commander right now. Because I'm not in, like, I love this comic, but I'm not entirely sold on Cobra Law mm-hmm. here. But a good reason to do it is because Hama is absolutely not going to in the other book. And it is a way to make these two universes even more different, which can only help
absolutely them. Tim. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I don't want to fully credit Josh. I feel like it's the Skybound Energon universe hive mind of creators who've decided Cobra Law makes sense. And also, you know, shout out Tim Seeley on that Devil's Due book, which did unite the Transformers and Unicorn origin with Cobra Law. That's what that series was about. You know, there was a shared, they existed in this shared world, and he brought in like the aliens from the G.I. Joe universe and stuff. I mean, hey, look, people who have been wanting to see like the Manimals, what are they called? Is it the Manimals?
Or like the Lunatrix aliens. Empire.
Like, who knows? Like, this is a superhero comic verse. And you, if you're going to accept that there's alien transforming robots in it, you can accept that there's a snake human civilization. Like, that's how I feel. But yes, you're absolutely right. Larry will never touch this stuff. And that's why we need it. And it's like, I love the Sunbow universe. I love the Larry Hama verse. You know, when I did Welcome to Cobra Island, I picked and chose all my favorite parts of everything and tried to like make this like, you know, make it all make sense together. In like, as you would as a kid, you take your favorite parts and what you're playing with. And like this, I like this and this. But I mean, Peter Parker, you know, look what they're doing with him now and in the new Ultimate Spider-Man. And he's, you know, you can do so many different versions. But yeah, you can tell I'm excited. Like, Mark, when you invited me to come on here, I was like, yes, like, this is the first Cobra, like, G.I. Joe comic in a while that has really gotten me excited. And then you said World War III, so I want to shout that out too, because I do like World War III for Devil's Due, but for different reasons.
Mark, what about the H word? What about horror? Sorry,
what about the actual question?
Well, yeah. If I can direct you to my original question.
I appreciate all of our guests, and as someone who goes on some tangents and speaks for a long time without letting the other people speak, I fully appreciate Word Burglar's answer to the H question. Mark?
Thank you for your question about horror. I'm now going to spend 20 minutes talking about the perspective employed in this issue. No, not really. So, Tim, when they were talking about, you know, the horror tone of this book, I was kind of thinking, I was not thinking about what we actually got. I was thinking it would be like, you know, be looking quite dark and moody and noir, and there'd be, you know, some violence and some blood, you know, kind of what we were hinted at, you know, in the preview with the this guy getting killed and left in a pool of blood and stuff, more of that kind of thing. So what we actually got was quite a surprise. It was quite unexpected, not what I was imagining when the word horror was using, although obviously they're going to some dark places and not afraid to show some blood and some freakiness. But what did you think, Tim?
When the four-page preview was released, I was surprised at how much it focused on pain and murder and blood. And if I were 13, I would think this is awesome. Finally, G.I. Joe's dark. I'm certain that the last two publishers of G.I. Joe comics would not have been able to do this scene. And so I think it's cool that Skybound, you know, asked or pushed and Hasbro said yes. I am a little uncomfortable when something that was originally PG starts to become PG-13. And, you know, like, you know, like Batman belongs to the world now, and there's like G-rated Batman toys and cartoons for very little kids, and there's PG-rated Batman toys and comics and cartoons for lots of people, and there are, you know, PG-13 ones, and they're really, really edgy, dark PG-13 ones that are kind of like rated R. But, you know, Batman was not that originally. And I'm nervous is not the right word, but I'm sort of aware that I don't think this is going to backfire. I don't think that there will be a backlash and people will say, well, this is so violent, so much blood. I think that just sort of where the culture is, we're, you know, a little desensitized to war on TV, real and fictional. And, you know, the pandemic brought pain and death much closer to a lot of people. All that said, this is a way to raise the stakes and make Cobra Commander dangerous and scary, which is great. But this is also like the most vicious scene we've ever seen in any G.I. Joe story. Actually, maybe, except for the scene in the animated movie when Nemesis Enforcer brings the mutating spores up to Cobra Commander and he screams, pleading, no, not the spores.
And so, and some Falcon sticking that worm stick into Globulus's eye was pretty pretty nasty as well, and I think created its own Mandela effect of people swearing that they saw it being plunged into his eye when they saw it, and there not being any actual evidence of that.
Yes, I'm one of those people. I'm sure I saw that on TV in you know May of 87. I guess these three examples show that Cobra Law brings out the worst in us.
Maybe.
In terms of horror, I think I didn't know what to expect. And I understood that the cover feels horror because Cobra Commander is creeping, you know, on the A cover. On a bunch of the other covers, he's like standing upright in a standard pose and he's gripping his fist or he's clasping at the air. And here he's sort of emerging. You know, like what are the two colors that say horror and Halloween, you know, or like cosmic horror, like green, like an underlit, like Tales from the Crypt image or story, you know, orange. And this cover is all green and there's snakes and there's an alien spaceship in the background and there's a full moon. At the same time, you know, I didn't expect that when the graphic novel comes out in June, Cobra Commander, determined to rule the world, that I would rack it at my store in the horror section. You know, this will go in the action section with G.I. Joe. Interestingly, Transformers goes in sci-fi. And so does Void Rivals. So I didn't know what to expect, but I think I was expecting sort of monsters, like in humanoids. But I guess once you do that, Cobra Law is not that big of a step. And to Berge's point about how crazy and the old cartoon was, right, you know, like time travel and aliens and you know, alternate dimensions, alternate realities. It's funny that Cobra Law is this line in the sand that some people refuse to cross. Mm-hmm. And I think the difference is all those other things were sort of for one episode or maybe a five-parter, and you could kind of take them or leave them. And G.I. Joe the movie was the last word. Mm. Like there was no more Sunbow G.I. Joe after that. And the G.I. Joe that did come after the Deke episodes was so different, you know, you might consider it a different show. And so, and then this other thing about Cobra Law is that it's not just that it's this other civilization that's hidden, it's that it's 40,000 years old, which is on a different scale, even of like aliens or, you know, time traveling to ancient Greece. Because what's that? That's a couple thousand years. That's not 40,000 years.
Yeah. And the other thing about sort of the introduction of Cobra Law in the G.I. Joe movie is that it doesn't just sort of, you know, affect that movie and maybe what goes beyond that, but it sort of looks backwards and says everything that you knew about Cobra and Cobra Commander was wrong, because all this time he was actually this other kind of person, a member of this secret civilization. So it sort of reaches backwards and kind of retrospectively changes continuity to some degree. And it sort of comes a little bit out of nowhere. It's a bit jarring. And I think the perfect thing about Cobra Commander here and introducing Cobra Lar is it's being introduced at the outset. So it's less of a jarring. It's like, here's Cobra Commander, and here he is as part of Cobra Lar. This is how he is from the first time you're introduced. And there's a quote from Kirkman when he's talking about this issue, is that he talks about it being baked in from the beginning. And the writer, Josh Williamson, talked about these two different ideas of Cobra Commander, of him being this used car salesman, and also this Cobra Lar creature from the movie. And he was thinking about, are there two ways of marrying it? And it seems like he's sort of taking that, him being a human who's lost his way, you know, maybe that troubled used car salesman who's found his way to Cobra Lar and then has gone on from there. And it's a similar sort of approach to the Energon universe more widely, that it's not that there's been a G.I. Joe universe established and a Transformers universe, and they've been going for some time, and then someone has said, why don't we have a crossover and just take these two universes and smush them together? It's sort of creating them both at the same time and seeding elements from each into the different books, so that they're all interlinked and it's all feeling, here's a pun for you, organic.
Yeah. You make several good points, and one of them is if you're standing over my shoulder reading my notes for this episode, because I was thinking about this earlier, and I wanted to make a point. I wanted to riff on how simultaneously exciting G.I. Joe the movie is, the animated movie, and also how disorienting it was to see as a kid, because I was 10 when it arrived on television, and there was no advance notice, and my brother and I caught the end of it, and we knew that it was G.I. Joe, but it's like, well, who are all these characters? Like, we sort of knew them from the toys, but it's not, you know, like Duke and Flint and Roadblock. It's like that new guy and that new gal and that other new guy and this snake guy, and like, what? And as you just said, like, everything you know is wrong. And you know, I don't blame Buzz Dixon or Ron Friedman, who wrote the movie, and they disagree on how much either of them wrote the movie. But the other thing that is interesting about this comic, Cobra Commander, so I appreciate that in terms of like, well, I don't know if G.I. Joe should go there. And as you said, it's just start notes, like on page 6, here's Cobra Lar. Cobra Lar is old news. You know, it's like, oh, no, sure. There's a generation of G.I. Joe fans for whom Cobra Lar is a bridge too far. But there's another generation of Joe fans who have gotten into G.I. Joe and either like gone in reverse chronological order. So like 1987 is some of the most recent stuff they've got. You know, it's like, oh, they got the IDW stuff. And then they looked at the Devil's Due stuff. And then they went to the Marvel stuff. And, oh, what about the cartoon? It's on the Hasbro's YouTube channel. Or they went in total out of order. And it's just one more part of the mix. And as Bergie says, maybe a clearly underused part of the mix. I think about sometimes how protective I feel of Tim Drake as Robin. And that Jason Todd really shouldn't have come back, but that's old news. You know, like if you got into comics in 2005, even before I owned a store, right? Like, oh, well, Jason Todd's been dead since, what is it, 87, 88? Like, that's old news. And, you know, there's an entire now generation and a half for whom Damian is the definitive Robin. And it's like, who's this Tim Drake guy? So I think someone could pick up, I think a lot of people could pick up Cobra Commander number one and not have any of these feelings of sort of like protecting G.I. Joe from Cobra Lar that that we might have or might recognize even if we don't have them. And I also think some of the Devil's Due comics that very definitely retold Larry Hama stories would include him in the credits, you know, like based on the works of Larry Hama, or special thanks to Larry Hama, or dedicated to Larry Hama. And in reading this comic, legally, you don't have to do this, Skybound, but I sort of felt like Buzz Dixon and Ron Friedman should get a little credit, you know, or, I mean, you know, they don't credit Ron Rudat for all these character designs, not just Cobra Law, but all the character designs. but, you know, when there's this accident and in this issue, Cobra Commander is mutated, I thought, well, this definitely goes in a different way, but I've also seen this before. You know, like people who are like writing and drawing Amazing Spider-Man right now, who are like retelling, you know, the second appearance of the Green Goblin and adding some detail, don't necessarily cite, you know, whoever it was, Stan Lee or, you know, Jerry Conway, who were writing that story at the time. But, okay, yeah, back to you.
This, you know, with Cobra Law being introduced and stuff, and I think this issue did have a risk of it being a very divisive take of introducing those characters so up front. I think that they pulled it off well in terms of how it was introduced. And from looking at the reaction, this issue does seem to have been very well received. I have seen a few voices out there saying that isn't really so much for them, or perhaps they, you know, liked it but still a little bit wary, but generally it's been very, very positive. So I think this risky take has somewhat paid off. Shall we just talk about the art in isolation a little bit?
Yeah.
From Andrea Milana and colorist Annalisa Leone. Do you want to hear my my take? We've got a little bit more cartooning going on here than the traditional kind of adventure style comic booky look to G.I. Joe that we're used to. I'm put in mind of artists like Rob Gilroy, who illustrated Chew, or Phil Hester, who's probably most famous for his work on Kevin Smith's Green Arrow. And there are the little touches here and there where it's sort of more evident than others. Like, for example, when he's smacked on the back in the bar, and there's that sort of explosive kind of effect on the back of his jacket, just sort of showing that kinetic force, which is definitely not trying to be literal, but really quite effective to me. And it's not dialing up that cartooning to 11. I think it's sort of just in that right place where it's got the balance, and possibly by mixing that horror with a bit more cartooning, it's slightly more palatable. What were your broad thoughts on the approach to the art from the team here?
So both the art and storytelling and color are great. And what the art is doing for me is it is slightly mixing rounded dimensional and flat. And so what's happening is it's like 8% becoming abstract. So like the panel under the one you just referred to, the smack, where the motorist who's about to get murdered by Cobra Commander, where he's walking away and he puts on his coat. His coat is definitely sort of looping up his arm and twirling around him. But the way that Milana draws it, it becomes a series of triangles and rectangles. And that happens with sort of everything in this. They are in the panel below that, with the wordless panel with the bartender and then Cobra Commander walking away, there is a slight flatness. And I think that's where you're getting Phil Hester. There's a slight flatness to the forms, you know, the bartender's arms, Cobra Commander's arm. But at the same time, because of how they're drawn and also colored, they're definitely, you know, rounded. This isn't like total flat abstraction. And this isn't even like Mike Mignola, like everything gets flattened. And then you turn the page and the bartender and the woman come out of the bar and they see that the murder is happening. And when we close up on her face above the three panels with all the blood, Milana draws her eyes just a little bit bigger than normal. And in the previous panel, her eyes are just a little line and a little dot. And again, that's a kind of cartooning where it's a kind of reduction, where he's not drawing the full realistic, you know, top line, bottom line, and the orbit, and, you know, the cornea and the retina and the pupil, right? He's taking information out. And when I saw this preview a couple months ago, who it really reminded me of, and this is not like someone more famous or a bigger deal, but who is in the pantheon of G.I. Joe artists, is Aaron Conley, who's an artist that probably Joe fans don't quite remember. Aaron Conley drew Scarlet's Strike Force and did a couple of the covers, did the B covers. This was the final G.I. Joe comic in the main sort of the Chuck Dixon IDW continuity that became the Hasbroverse, the Revolutionverse, where this was a G.I. Joe team with a Transformer on the team. And this was the series written by Aubrey Citizen. And it only ran, this comic only ran three issues. Connolly had done a couple covers for the previous series, the 2016 G.I. Joe, and in fact did one whole issue. And it was sort of the similar team where, you know, it's there's a Transformer running around. And Connolly is doing a similar thing, sort of cartooning, like making things like rounded and cartoony and like drawing sort of cartoony eyes and cartoony mouths, but also like kind of flattening things. Okay, so beyond like actual shapes, Milana's storytelling and acting, quote, camera angles are great. Low camera, high camera, close camera, far camera. In a previous episode, I was pretty hard on the artist who's currently drawing Larry Hama's A Real American Hero, and I made the point that there's very little linear perspective, and a lot of the spaces feel sort of cramped. And, you know, like, look at the page here where after the explosion, like the big explosion in the science building, the page after it, where we're looking down at this giant round hall and there are lots of little stick figures running around, or turn the page one more time where Cobra Commander in a particular costume has just killed a scientist. The next page starts with a panel with almost no characters in it. We're just looking at this giant, giant door. What a great sense of scale. And the camera is sort of like 2 inches below the ground, looking up, right? You don't even have to go to the two-page splash, the big reveal with Megatron, to see some good two-point linear perspective, right? A bunch of diagonal lines going sort of from north west, or going from northeast into the sort of middle. It's great.
I'll just mention, in terms of the line work, that this is all done digitally, and the way that the artist Andrea Milana draws is to sort of do the black and white, but also add in gray tones as well to, I guess, help inform some of the coloring decisions.
That's cool. Colorist Annalisa Leone, if you're a Star Wars fan, you have seen her work on a handful of issues of Star Wars The High Republic and a couple issues of Star Wars Yoda. And if you go to her Instagram page, which is instagram.com/leone.a_art, what's really cool here is the pieces that you see, you can tell that she's not just someone who colors. She can absolutely draw. She can do costume design. She can draw animals. She understands light, right? She's a painter, like digitally, but a painter. There's cartooning. There's interesting composition. And it is not a prerequisite that color artists need to be able to also draw comics. But man, when that occasionally happens, that sure helps. One last thing that I like about the colors here. Leone changes the color for every scene. So The first two panels of the comic, light blue, because we're outside. Scene inside the bar, green. Cut back to outside when the murder happens, light blue. Cut to Cobra Law, it's very yellow, right? Like all the blues in Cobra Law, they're really aqua, right? And this keeps happening. And then when we're inside the building, when the rebellion takes place, like very yellow. And this is just one more thing to add variety so that, you know, like you think of comics from the 70s and like color artists weren't doing that because they really couldn't. They didn't have as many choices. You know, it's like it's daytime or nighttime. You know, the sky is either light blue or maybe it's pink or yellow just cause. Not necessarily because it's like sunset or sunrise. It's just cause, just to create some variety. Really like the art. Oh, and then one last thing about the art. When the Royal Guard, the trio of them, try to attack Cobra Commander, and then when they're swinging their very sharp weapons, there's some cool blurring. And, you know, did I mention Russ Wooten as letterer when we talked about Duke? I did, because I liked the sound effects. Yes. Man, are the sound effects in this cool.
Let's talk about SFX, baby. Let's talk about pew and scree. Let's talk about shooting gun things and the sound effects. We'll see. Let's talk about SFX. Let's talk about SFX.
Like on page 1, 2, 3, 4. On page 4, you know, the the scream, you know, like that's a choice.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't like, it's like that could have been Times New Roman. That could have just been like regular handwriting. That could have been some like literal horror font, you know, like the Tales from the Crypt or the Vault of Horror. Like, no, don't do that. Right.
And it's snowing outside, so the letterings, the is red, covered in a dusting of snow.
The lettering here, actually, there's a slight sort of thin, jagged quality to it, which agrees with how Andrea Milana draws inks. And then the one last thing I wanted to say, and then I actually will pass it back to you.
And also on this same page, we've also got a really iconic sound effect, which is the zutrictic. Do you want to do your own take on this as well? Just so we've got so is it a bit of a mystery? We saw it in the preview, and this is, you know, I think this sound effect is linked to the, you know, corpse on the floor with the Cobra logo, and this sound effect repeats later on in the story. So we sort of do find out what is causing that. We'll touch on that maybe in a minute.
The guy who gets murdered has just said, "What do you got there, weirdo? Some kind of toy?" The last thing I wanted to say about the art is that the way that Milana draws, I don't know what digital brush or pen he's using, but it reminds me of a calligraphy pen where you have a wedge, where you have a flat wedge. It's not a point like a ballpoint or a felt tip pen. It's a wedge. And so you can, if you think of calligraphy, there are thin lines and there are thick lines. And the thick lines come from holding the calligraphy pen so that the wedge is at a 45 degree angle. And then you go to the right, or you go up. And it's something that not a lot of comic artists sort of draw that way. And it's another thing that reminds me of Aaron Conley, that other artist I was referring to. Mm-hmm. This style is not, it's not overly detailed. And yet, you look at the second panel of this entire comic, you know, the exterior scene with the buildings and the snow, and it's not like the artist is running out of time or lazy. Like, this is all a choice, and art and color and lettering are great.
Mm. As well, and I guess the other technique that you see a little bit here is a kind of like a black dry brush type of effect that you might, you know, get from. Like a, you know, a Pentel sort of.
I think you mean a dry brush.
Yeah, I mean a dry brush, or you know, possibly squinting, it might, you know, be charcoaly. It's a digital effect, so it's not a real brush, but it's that definite effect there. You can see it in particularly in that page with the giant boom. So let's cover some sort of high level thoughts as we go through it. We had the introductory sequence, which we saw quite a few times as preview images, highly promoting the series, very familiar with us. And then there's that page turn, and it just says before, and we see this Cobra La landscape, and it's sort of this world of organic life. It looks like a sort of Roger Dean psychedelic fantasy landscape. all of these organic kind of shapes with little sort of scenes of Cobra Last citizens going about their business, someone harvesting.
Sorry, it looks a little like it's underwater. I mean, the shapes, you know, it looks like, I'm sorry to interrupt. It looks like coral reefs and anyway, please continue.
And then there's someone harvesting some crops. One of my Easter eggs is that little guy harvesting the crops looks, and some people have said he looks a bit like a techno viper, but I think he looks an awful lot like a mole rat, which is one of these new Cobra classified figures.
Mm.
And flying manta rays. Doing that page turn was a bit like
everything you know is wrong, Mark.
A WTF moment. I was like, what? I need to turn to the person next to me, point at this and say, what the actual hell is happening here in this comic? I was not expecting that.
And your wife said, I don't read those comics.
I do not care.
I had the same reaction. I was not at all expecting Cobra Law. I didn't read any spoilers. I didn't read the preview. I'm a store owner, so I get some full PDF previews of some comics, a week or two or three before they arrive. I was really surprised.
Mm.
And then I thought, okay, I don't know if I like this, but that you know, that thing that I said before, this makes this very different from the other G.I. Joe continuity, which is a good thing. And it's like, no, they're aliens. They're robot aliens in this universe. So like, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in Duke Number One, he's got a jetpack that comes out of nowhere. It's small and it unfolds and it's like, that tech doesn't exist. You know, it's like everyone's anyway. So, and then I turned the page again.
Boom,
and I actually had a hard time understanding what was happening on the big panel with the boom. I couldn't tell if one of the buildings we had seen on the previous two page spread, where was an explosion inside it and it was being sort of inflated, or if this round building is already a sphere and there just happens to be an explosion in it and all of the sort of effect ink lines and the like direction of the lettering is just like, you know, sound and air pressure, but not an actual like building inflating and then, you know, and then in the next panel, I thought, okay, I think that's a Molotov cocktail. Okay, I think, are they running in, right? Or are they running out because, you know, like, are they running out because there was an explosion and they're fleeing, or is this an attack? I was a little unclear on this page.
Mm. And it becomes clear the next page that it's an attack on this lab. And they're, on that page, they're doing that somewhat, again, divisive cry, which some people will love and some people will send shivers of horror down their spine for different reasons, where they are shouting, Cobra, la 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 la. So we're in the lab. They're being attacked by this mob because word of the monstrosity has leaked. We'll find out what that monstrosity is. And then there's this guy who seems to be taking the lead. The mob will kill us all when they see what we have done. We have committed crimes against our ways. We must retreat! Retreat! And then, bang, shot through the head. So obviously, this is a bait and switch here. We're being introduced to this guy.
This is a misdirect.
It looks pretty much exactly like Cobra Commander in the flashback scenes of G.I. Joe the movie, when he was a young nobleman who is taking part in a scientific experiment. He's using that classic Cobra Commander catchphrase of from Sunbow of retreat, and then is shot in the head, bang, and no one retreats. It's kind of a mission statement wrote large here, that this Cobra Commander is very different to the Sunbow Cobra Commander and is not one for retreating.
In the letters page, which is a two-column, one-page welcome from writer Joshua Williamson, he says, early on, we had a rule for this version of Cobra Commander. This Cobra Commander would not retreat.
Mm.
He would fire back and take charge.
So we've got the gold-helmeted red-masked Cobra Commander, which is Cobra Commander version 4 from 1991, who's not been seen in the comics very much. It's a bit more of an obscure Cobra Commander look. But this is almost the fourth look of Cobra Commander in the book so far, because we've got Old Snake in that sort of big the trench coat and floppy hat. We've got Cobra Commander, the nobleman look from the movie. We've got Cobra Commander being shot through the head with a giant bang, which may be coincidental or may be a reference to the IDW Cobra Commander who was shot through the head in a similar way. And then we've got version 4 Cobra Commander here. And then later on, we have the classic version 1 look, the iconic look to Cobra Commander. So we're getting a lot of different sides to the character of Cobra Commander in this book. And I bet you by the end of the series, we'll probably see that battle armor Cobra Commander just for good luck at some point.
For those of you who don't know the reference to Old Snake, there's a 1986 episode of Transformers season 3, takes place after the movie, so it's 2006, and there's a character voiced by Chris Latta who has the silver mask but not the blue dome and a fedora and a trench coat, and sounds like Cobra Commander, and at the end yells Cobra and is working with the Decepticons to make life hard for the Autobots. And that episode is a cute convergence point of continuity for G.I. Joe and Transformers cartoons. And you can take it or leave it whether, you know, those two cartoons really were in the same universe. So the variant covers of this issue, where Cobra Commander has a fedora and just the silver and the trench coat, that's Old Snake. So it turns out that the guy in the gold helmet with the red mask, Cobra Commander version 4 action figure, who shoots the other guy in the head, is the actual character we know as Cobra Commander, because he's the Caucasian guy in this scene with people who have sort of light pale blue skin.
Possibly masked to disguise that he's human Caucasian rather than looking like the rest of them, perhaps?
Yeah. It's not clear.
It's not specified, but yeah.
And that doesn't seem like an oversight. Either this costume, him in this costume, is just a fun Easter egg for fans, or it's like, you know, here's your pressure suit because you're in Cobra Law and you're not one of us and you breathe differently. Or like, well, you're a scientist and you're the head scientist of the science corps and you need, you know, like red gloves because, you know, splatter. But so this issue has some sort of callbacks, and some of them are these surprises, like the misdirect from the previous page. And some of them are. So then on the next page, the Cobra Commander says, our main goal now is to protect our research. Let the fools in. We'll deal with them. And then he throws this red thing, and he hands a red thing to one of the other scientists, and he throws one, and it explodes in front of some of the rebels who have entered. And the explosion, and one of them screams, ah, it burns. And then this scientist who he just handed the red, let's say, grenade to says, should I throw this as well? And I think the idea here is that this scientist with the long hair is not a warrior, wasn't expecting a rebellion to come crashing through the door, isn't prepared to throw this red grenade. And so Cobra Commander says, you fool. And there's a little bit of light sort of where we are sort of emanating toward him to hint that when you turn the page, there's going to be this big explosion. So he hands this grenade, this monster bomb, to like a lab assistant, and he says, kill some of the rebels. And that person says, what? And then it blows up.
It's a great beat.
He is caught in this. And so this is not redoing the beat from the animated movie, but having a similar thing happen to him, which is that he is mutated and injured in a lab accident.
And then he's sort of put back together again using mysterious Cobra Law medicine, which includes this sort of three-headed snake that bites him as part of the process. And you know, but by the end of it, he's got a Cobra Law-ish extra eye sort of growing just above where his right eye is, and he's sort of recuperating in a Cobra La hospital room, I take it, and there's like a kind of an octopus creature plugged into him, like instead of an IV machine, and up on the ceiling, instead of like a regular light, there's, it's kind of like a glowing fish in a kind of dome. So we're in a sort of very different kind of environment to a typical sterile Western hospital that we'd recognize.
In the first couple episodes of the cartoon in 1983, Destro enters Cobra Commander's main room, and the camera's behind Cobra Commander, and he's finishing a meal, and he's seated, and Destro comes in and says, "Commander, your mask." And Cobra Commander says, "It takes a strong stomach to be able to look at me, Destro." And then it cuts back to him as he finishes putting on his mask. And that was always left up to the imagination, right? Ron Friedman, writing those first 5 or 10 episodes, did not have in mind that he was this like monster scientist guy from 40,000 years ago in the Himalayas, right? Retroactively, that gets written in later. So I guess all the Caucasian around his eyes in the cartoon that we could see in season 1 when he had his hood on was makeup, because his skin in the show was actually light blue. Mm. And so there's this version of this here, which is how much of him is of our world and how much of him is of the Cobra La world. And what I appreciate about this comic book is that it gives a better origin to Cobra, right? All the retroactive continuity of Arise, Serpentor, Arise, and G.I. Joe the movie, it doesn't quite do enough to like explain all the crazy changes that they're making. You know, it's like, I guess the bad guy army is going to be called Cobra. Why? Just cause. And here it's like, well, Cobra Law is all built on organic, right? It's not, there isn't concrete and steel. You know, everything is like chitinous shells of giant insects and, mucus. So Cobra Commander is put back together with some snakes. And I appreciate, it doesn't hit you over the head like Pythona or Galobulus says, "You will put a Cobra insignia on your chest and go forth as the Cobra agent. Do what you will," right? He doesn't have the Cobra symbol on his blue cloth uniform. But we can put two and two together that, you know, it was either going to be like an octopus or a beetle or a cobra or, you know, something, because this is a world of all these organic creatures.
So in his hospital room, let's call it, as he's recuperating, next to him is the familiar Cobra Commander sort of battle helmet with the chrome that we recognize. "Put it on. Hide your shame. You have been summoned," says Pythona as she comes in the room. So this is the introduction of the first Cobra La characters that we would recognize from the movie. Pythona, flanked by two royal guards, escorted to a sort of giant door, again, sort of familiar kind of technology that we'd recognize from G.I. Joe the movie, a giant door which is kind of teeth of a kind of unseen organic creature that opens to come into this cavernous dome, where we see a one-page splash of Galobulus being introduced here, sort of. We're not shown his entire body here, but we do know from having seen second print covers that he is kind of the Globulus that we know and love, even if it's shadowed here.
And I wish that second print cover had been saved for a different comic, because I think that's the kind of thing that, I think that's a fun reveal that you want to actually be revealed in the comic. In the comic.
So he's talking now to Cobra Commander in the best Burgess Meredith voice.
"I found you, lost in the outside world, aimless, searching for meaning, and brought you to Cobra La, gave you purpose, and this is how you repay me. Our people worship only the organic, the gifts of the flesh and natural order of life."
And so he's got this blasphemous technology that we've still not quite seen. Cobra Commander sort of making his case. He's been brought in. He's sort of been promoted. But he's gone too far. And he is going to be put to death by these three Royal Guard before he unveils something that makes, again, that familiar sound effect, zook, truk, truk, that he releases these insect robots upon the Royal Guard, which kills them in rather gruesome ways. And seeing those insects made me think, Insecticons? Did you have the same thought, Tim?
Yes, in a good way. In a bad way, it also made me think of all the, like, tiny, stupid things that become Transformers in the Michael Bay movies, like a Pepsi can and a toaster and, like, an actual insect or whatever. But yeah, cool. Insecticons. Or, you know what these actually really remind me of? Deluxe Insecticons. And folks, if you don't know the difference because you're a Joe fan, the first three Insecticons are black, purple, and yellow. And then the next wave, it's four other toys, and they were like green and red and maroon and orange. The page where the three Royal Guard try to execute Cobra Commander, he tumbles out of the way, which is really cool because this has never been a physical character in comics or in cartoons. He's never, you know, like thrown punches and attacked in that way. You know, he commands from the back, or he's on the top of a his tank, or he maybe fires his weapon. So that was a fun change.
Yeah, we're looking at a more bloodthirsty and physically capable and ruthless Cobra Commander. So based on this sort of survival of the fittest, I think Cobra Commander is able to convince Golobulus that he could go, and not just go, but go with a new title and a special mission for the outside world. But before he goes back to his lab. There's this giant vault, clunk, it opens, and then there's this double page reveal of Megatron, who's armless and harmless, perhaps, I don't know. Can't rely on Megatron to be completely harmless. And he's almost in this sort of subservient bowing position that he's been locked into as Cobra Commander monologues about how he has been able to... He's got some secrets that he's not shared with Golobulus that he's found out about the Transformers civilization in space beyond, and that he's found a way to tear those secrets from Megatron and look to harness them. He leaves Megatron behind... And as he does so, Megatron has a single eye that sort of turns on in red, kzukt, and gives us, the audience, a slightly disturbing grin.
This snow vehicle that we then see in the next page.
Sort of decked, a sort of tracked snow vehicle decked out in... A-team colors with a
So right, so when we saw that in the preview, right, it's on page 3 of the comic, so we did see it in a couple other comics the last few months, I thought, is this supposed to remind me of Kit and the A-team van? Because I actually don't know what snow tracked vehicles look like nowadays. You know, I sort of knew what some of them looked like 20 years ago, so that's fun.
Yeah, sort of 80s action vibes, I guess.
His driver, right, he says, Golobulus insisted you join me on my mission, but I will not entertain your foolish questions, Grunt. Now drive. Is he calling him Grunt, like, soldier? Hey, you? Or is this person's name Grunt?
Yeah, there's been a lot of debate about this, because he does say... I will not entertain your foolish questions. Grunt is that his name, or is it kind of just a bit of a throwaway insult term? It's like, could he have said worm or underling or some other such?
You know, I am hoping that it's just some guy, because the IDW run took a lot of guys who didn't have facial hair and gave them goatees, and I didn't love that. Like Mainframe, right? Wasn't Mainframe?
Yep, Mainframe. Yep.
And it's a small thing to be irked about. And I know that, you know, like fashions change with the time. So, you know, it's like, well, Roblox had, you know, I guess Roblox had a mustache, which became a goatee. And like, you know, no one's going to hire The Rock to be in a live action movie and have him have a mustache. It's like, no, that's a goatee or that's a beard. I get it. But so either this comic is like not wasting any opportunity to insert one more character, one more little hint appearance. I don't even want to say Easter eggs, right? Pythona isn't an Easter egg here. She's a character. Right, yeah. She's a supporting character. But this guy is, you know, he's got a full beard. His hat changes from green to blue. I really hope that in issue 3 of Duke isn't like, all right, I've captured you, chauffeur for that guy with the silver face. Join my team. What are we going to call you? Well, they call me Grunt. I was like, no, don't do that.
I'll point out two main thoughts that I've got here. So the first one is that he talks about the fact that that this guy Grunt is in a disguise. You should take on a disguise as well. It will draw less attention. So it implies that he's in disguise. The logical explanation is that he's been sent there by Globulus to accompany Cobra Commander. So he is one of the Cobra Lar, so would have blue skin and would stand out. Could he be another Cobra Lar character, like Nemesis Enforcer, Nemesis Immortal, as he's now called? Or I think it might have been Steve Jobber had the speculation, could it even be Zartan? Could Zartan's origins with his sort of blue skin and sort of slightly inhuman abilities of disguise, could he be traced back to Cobra Lar, which is an interesting thought. So yeah, the what we're seeing of this guy is not this guy. But beyond that, calling him Grunt, there seems to be the writing here from Joshua Williamson seems to have a lot of intentionality behind it, a lot of thought, careful choosing of individual words. And he would know that Grunt is a character. So to have it coming out of nowhere, either he's playing with us as the audience and making us speculate about what that word means, or he's got some thought behind it. But I don't think it's an accident that that word is used. It may be something that comes of something, or it may not be anything.
One more quick thing going back two pages. The panel where we see Cybertron, although I realize now it's not Cybertron. I think that's the Matrix. Uh-huh. Or that's a very different take on Cybertron, because the Cybertron we've always seen doesn't have a giant hole in it. Anyway, there's a white and blue guy here. It's like Omega Supreme, but in white and blue. And for our Joe fans who aren't big Transformers fans, that's a Guardian robot. And Omega Supreme is one of them. And they're ancient. Okay, so back to the final two scenes. So the final page, in terms of scripting, just to sort of complete a loop, on the second to last page, in response to that bit about a costume, he says, no, I want to get their attention, and the world will fear the name of, and you turn the page, Cobra Commander, right? The dialogue is finished, even though we cut elsewhere. We cut to Florida, which is where the previous page ends with a map on a globe hologram. Okay, so I liked this comic a lot. Peppy writing, many familiar things, some new things, some things turned on their head, continues to connect with the other book, one of the other books in this universe, which is really fun. I'm a big Transformers fan. A lot of respect being shown for all of these characters and properties, and, you know, a mix of old and new. Writing, art, color, lettering, design, great book. This is not a good last page.
Huh.
And I realized it both when I read it and also just before we started this episode, because this isn't enough of a cliffhanger. One more thing needs to happen. Like, either as the camera over these three panels on the final page tracks in closer and closer to this shack in the swamp, right? There's a shack with a little bit of a dock on the water, and there's some trees behind it. In the first two panels, you can see that something's on the door, but you can't see what. And then on the final panel, you see what's on the door is a sort of beefed up Dreadnoks logo. Looks like, and then written over it is the word Dreadnoks, and it's sort of dripping as if it was like spray paint. And that's fun, and that's the beginning of sort of an exciting thing or reveal or tease or for the final page. But three big shocks already happened in this comic when you turn the page. And, you know, the Cobra Law reveal and the rebellion at Cobra Law and the two-page spread of Megatron, right? And the turn page on Globulus and the turn page on Pythona, right? Five medium and big things have already happened. And either, like, we need to continue into this door and someone is there and it's a surprise, you know, like it's Zartan or it's Zarana, or it's like Zarana and she's holding a little Cobra Law octopus, or it's Duke, right? Like, what's going on, you know? Or it's like it's Mercer, right? Or it's a corpse. It doesn't even have to be a person in this. I mean, this page either needed to be somewhere else with someone else, or it needed to be here with someone. And if you're reading the collection later this year, you know, no big deal. You just turn the page and then you keep reading. But in terms of, you know, sort of how satisfying like Transformers number one was and Transformers number two and Duke number one, not a good last page.
Mm. Okay. I mean, that's one person's opinion. I think as a last page, it kind of fulfills probably its intent, which is like, here's what's coming next issue to look forward to. It's going to be the Dreadnoks. And you think, Dreadnoks already in Cobra Commander. Right, that's going to be cool. And that was enough for me.
Fair.
And I spy on this page, Dreadnok logo. This is the G.I. Joe classified Dreadnok logo, which was created by Vertebrae 33. And features on the likes of, I think, the Zartan classified packaging. So, yeah, cool that they're using that. Seeing as we're talking about some I Spies, let's get into a couple more.
I spy with my little eye.
There was some discussion I saw online about Cobra Commander's sibilance, so those sort of rolling S's that he's got, and that maybe it was a little bit inconsistent. I think for the most part it is relatively consistent. Pre-accident, when he's just that scientist, he's not got any of the S's, but after the accident, I think he's, you know, part of that, you know, the damage inflicted on him from it is, and the subsequent Cobra Law repairs has probably created that that sort of speech defect with the S's.
I've always felt like it's a choice and an affectation. It's like wearing a fedora.
Mm.
Because on the second to last page, when he talks to his driver, he does it once, right? But I think Williamson is deciding to do it occasionally, because if you keep doing it, it might get annoying to the reader, right? So my reasons are too great for your small mind. Right? That doesn't happen in either of those, right?
Yeah.
Globulus doesn't happen there. Insisted doesn't happen there. You join on my mission, right? But foolishness grunt. So I think it's, I think he chooses.
I've got an I Spy, which is not from this book. It was from Duke One, where there was that conspiracy theory house that Duke visits. And he's overhearing the dialogue, and one of the people says, "It's a secret society in the ice, man." And we thought, "Ha, that's quite a sort of funny. It could be potentially a reference to Cobra Law." And lo and behold, here we go. It's Cobra Law. Was there anything else that you wanted to call out specifically, Tim?
When Cobra Commander dispatches the three Royal Guard, they're wearing helmets. Because one of his insect attack robots hits one of them, who screams, and he's turning his head away from us, and you can see a vein on the neck, and the skin is sort of pinkish, kind of Caucasian. But then on the next page, the one who hasn't maybe quite died yet, or maybe his chest has already exploded, yikes, he has white hair, and he has taken the helmet off. And I always took from the toy and the animated movie and the Cobra Law file cards. I always took it to be that these were like beetle insectoid men.
Okay.
And that they weren't wearing clothes. Well, their capes were clothing. Their boots and gloves were clothing. Mm. But their red carapaces were carapaces. So that was interesting. And you know, that could be in the script, or that could just be Andrea Milano making a choice, or that could be Andrea Milano sort of just taking a quick look at the movie and being like, oh, those must be their helmets. I'll draw them with their helmets coming off.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I haven't necessarily thought about it too much, but it kind of makes sense that if it's a society of humanoid type people, that broadly speaking, they'd kind of look similar, although obviously Globulus looks very different on his lower half. This doesn't fit into a particular segment, but I've got a wild theory out there, which I don't expect to be true, but I just wanted to float this out there and get it on the record that this Cobra Commander series isn't really necessarily particularly pinpointed in any time, apart from, you know, maybe the connection of Megatron to Transformers that might give us some clues eventually, although I don't think it's yet clear from Transformers. This could be in the future, and it could be that Duke goes on his adventure, issues 1 to 5, is chased, tracked down by G.I. Joe and turned against G.I. Joe because they're, you know, they're the antagonists to his crusade. He's, you know, very against Transformers and maybe wants to seek those out with a mission and finds some Transformers technology in the Arctic wastes. And ends up being a disillusioned young man who is taken in by Cobra Law and becomes Cobra Commander. How's that for a wild idea, Tim?
I like the larger query of what is the timeline. I was thinking earlier, not in terms of when there's a Duke collection, a Cobra Commander collection, and then the next two miniseries, and then sort of the inevitable like Codename G.I. Joe Volume 1, or maybe it's just called G.I. Joe. I don't think so. But I was thinking when there's a larger book, you know, like a compendium or a deluxe hardcover with 3 or 4 arcs, will it be in publication order, like Duke and Cobra Commander, and then the other two miniseries, or what? But it hadn't occurred to me yet that we don't really know, except for this touch point of Megatron, we don't really know when this takes place.
Quote of the week, quote of the week, quote of the week, quote of the week,
quote of the week, quote of the week,
quote of the week.
I had a favorite line of dialogue to call out, which was Cobra Commander, who said, "Many things can be used as a weapon, and science is one of them."
Hmm.
Did you have something to call out, Tim? Or
no, but not for any bad reason. I thought all the dialogue was good and fun and peppy, and I was struck by how much screaming there was.
Okay, before we give our scores, let's see if we've got anything in our virtual mailbox.
Postbox bit, this is where you can send in your thoughts. Mark and Tim will hear it, and then we'll discuss it. It's really nice to hear from our biggest fans.
Oh, look, we've got a message from Scotty Cameron, who gave us his thoughts on ARAR last time and is back with his thoughts on Cobra Commander.
Yo, Joe. Hello, Mark and Tim. Cobra Commander. Loved it. After seeing the preview in ARAR 303 and all the other comics from Duke to Transformers, I was excited and it did not disappoint. We get Cobra Law, which was wildly unexpected, also tying Cobra Law into Cobra Commander's origin. Very interesting. Also, we get Megatron. It's fitting enough that this came off of Transformers 4, where Optimus rips off Megatron's arm to use his own, but now we get more Megatron, and it looks like Cobra Commander woke him up. Also, is this Grunt? Robert Graves, or is this character in the Grunt in the comic named Grunt? Not that Grunt. Well, I guess we'll have to find out. Well, Now you know, and knowing is half the battle.
Thanks, Scotty. So
thanks, Scotty.
If you want to reach out to us, like Scotty, with your thoughts on our coverage of anything G.I. Joe, or your thoughts on the latest issues as they come out, feel free to contact us via our voicemail facility. You can find that by going to talkingjoe.co.uk, scrolling down to the bottom of the page and clicking the link to leave us a voicemail.
It's Joe-age time.
Welcome back to Bergie, who just had to step out. But as we are sort of concluding, do you want to just give us your Yojo Cola score out of 10 and your in a nutshell summary of how you felt about this issue?
I give it, I would say, a high 8, maybe 8.5. It's issue 1, the introduction. Still need to see where this goes. I do have some questions. I'm curious if the driver picking up Cobra Commander at the end of the issue, if it's an undercover Joe or if it is a Dreadnought, or who it is. I'm also curious to know a bit more about how Cobra Commander stumbled into Cobra Law in the first place, you know, and which I feel like might get touched upon. I hope we see a bit more of that. I don't think it's that necessary, because it seems like he is just a normal human who stumbled into Cobra Law, as opposed to the Sunbow origin, where he is an actual original citizen of Cobra Law who goes out into the quote-unquote real world. But really good. I also did enjoy Duke number 1. I know we're not talking about that, but I think, again, by the same writer as well, it's nice to see that Joshua Williamson is flexing different takes, you know, where we've got Duke who is giving us that. It almost is like, okay, let's give a harder, you know, a more military based Joe comic with this more horror sci-fi based book. And it's I'm super excited about Skybound, and I'm telling everybody, like, if you're a Joe fan, give it a shot. Like, the classified toys are what is really dominating the conversation, I think, amongst Joe fans right now. Rightly so, because it's great. They're great, and it's very exciting, and it seems to have reignited the fan base, which I haven't seen, and it's been like, you know, in like 10 years, like, to see this much excitement around G.I. Joe. And now the fact that we've got this great comic series starting again, and of course Larry's continuing that stuff, it's looking better than ever. Great art on that stuff. I have a lot of thoughts about G.I. Joe comics, and you guys are the first people to ask me about them, so I appreciate it. But it's good. I'd say a strong 8.5 out of 10. I think 10's pretty hard to win, but art, beautiful, dialogue, great. My one gripe, and this has been since the original 5-page preview was released and kind of left a weird taste in my mouth, was the gory scene in the first 5 pages where Cobra Commander then leaves a trail of blood in the shape of the exact Cobra logo. I found that a bit like, okay, but like, does he have a gun that shoots it out in the shape of the Cobra logo in blood? Like, does he have a stamp? Like, or did he actually take the time to write out a Cobra symbol with his finger, like he's finger painting it in the snow after murdering a guy and then like escaping? Like, it, no matter how I thought of it, I was just like, that's just, I mean, if I was 7 years old and saw this on Saturday morning, I would have been like, whoa, that's crazy. But as a non-7-year-old, I find it, little things like that in comics, when you read enough comics, every now and then you get a panel like that and you're like, really? Okay, I guess I'll just take that. But that that loses one demerit point.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, is it? It looks like it's literal, doesn't it? That snake in the snow. Could have, you know, was it Cobra Commander doing his finger painting? Was it the last act of the dying man? Was it his freaky hairdryer gun leaving a pattern when it gets shot? I don't know.
Oh, that's a good theory. I didn't think it could have been the last act of the guy, but I don't think Cobra Commander's wearing the Cobra logo.
He's not wearing a logo, is he? So it wouldn't make so much sense.
And the guy's index finger doesn't have blood on the tip, so he didn't draw that.
What's your take on that? Like, what do you think, Tim? What do you?
I had sort of thought that it was like trying to have it both ways, that like the blood happened to pool that way, and the camera sort of focuses on it. But then the more I thought about that, that's too much of a stretch. So I think this ties in with Cobra Commander's comment about wanting to be seen and not be subtle or undercover. So he's going to kill this guy in a big, dramatic way so that news will spread, and he's going to, if not brand the man, then brand the scene.
You know, Tim, I think you just no-prized that for me. I kind of like that. I that makes sense. He really wants to, he wants everybody to know exactly who did this.
He says, "I want the attention," later on. So maybe that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's...
Maybe he's got a stencil.
Oh, you no-prize that for sure. Nice work. I like that. Great, then I guess this goes up to a 9 for me.
So, time for our Joeage.
7? 7? 8? 7. I think it's a step down. It's a step down because it was so violent. I mean, remember the first couple years of IDW's Real American Hero had a mature readers label on it, right? Like, anyway, a very, very happy 7. Also, not to dig into that final page. It's not my favorite final page. Duke felt more cohesive, and I'm not saying Cobra Commander 1 lacked cohesion or, you know, fell apart, but it jumps around a lot more, and I think that'll pay off later. But as a comic by itself, I'm aware 7, but I really liked it.
Yeah, I'm sort of in the same boat. When I first read this and I got to the end and I was thinking about how would I give it a scoring, I was like, I'm not sure I know how I feel about it at the time. I thought, like, do I score this really high, or do I score it really low, or do I need to know the rest of the context, the rest of the issues to actually know how I'd feel about it as a whole? Because this is just one issue on its own, and it could go either way. It could be, you know, build on it and be something I really love, or it could go in a different direction that I really dislike. And sort of generally, you know, Cobra Lar's been a concept that I like less, but I think they handled it really, really well here, and so I'm quite excited about that as a, you know, prospect. And as it's percolated with me, I think I've you know, felt like I like it more and more. So yeah, maybe something like an 8, but with a kind of a ... behind that, because I don't necessarily know that it's going to be a momentum behind that will continue, that I keep on, you know, I'll enjoy it or be surprised by the next issue as much. Okay, so that was a good dig into all things Cobra Commander issue 1. Next time on Talking Joe, we will continue to cover the latest issues as they come out. G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero 304 will be out on the 21st of February, along with Cobra Commander issue 2. Duke is out on the 31st of January, so probably will have been out already by the time this hits. The plan was to cover Duke 2 and 3 and Cobra Commander 2 and 3 as separate episodes, so two issues at a time. So we'll do 2 and 3 and then 4 and 5. So yeah, really looking forward to that, covering all of those issues as the Skybound era continues. And can you remind the listeners where people can find you, Bergie, when you are not talking to us about G.I. Joe?
Wordburglar.com is the easiest place. I'm on Spotify, Bandcamp, Apple, anywhere you want to listen to the music. And I've got a new comic book in the works that we're launching a Kickstarter for, with Steve McNiven's doing the cover, whole bunch of incredible artists on interior. I'm doing comic adaptations of a lot of my songs. And so we're going to be doing a Kickstarter for that coming up this spring. And I'm really, really excited about that. And then, a few other little projects in the works. Yeah.
Is there a title you can share?
Yeah, you know, it's just right now Word Burglar Comics. Like I'm playfully calling it Rhymes with Comics. It's just going to be called the Word Burglar, Lyrical Comics. Steve McNiven, I've known for years, and I've got the art already. It's mind blowing. And Steve did the cover. Jason Lowe, who does a lot of work at Marvel right now, he's did one story. Mike Holmes, who illustrates the Wings of Fire, the graphic novels with the dragons, is an old friend of mine. He's illustrating a story. My friend Dave Howlett. Whack, if you guys know Whack, who did like a mask comic. Yeah. He's got a comic in it. He's actually, surprisingly, doing a song about Cobra Law in it. And so there's stuff about Star Wars comics, G.I. Joe, Transformers, just fun rhymes. And I'm going to have a lot more to talk about once we get the Kickstarter launched, which will be, I'm hoping to have it launched by like April. So that's kind of what I'm working on really heavily behind the scenes right now. And it's a lot of fun just breaking down my songs, which a lot of them are like storytelling. So like, and I think in comic book panels anyway, so laying them out in like as an actual comic where you can listen to the song and then read along with the comic book. So I'm having so much fun doing that, and I'll let you know when that launches, but that's taking up a lot of my time, so comics are always on the brain.
So great. So it just remains for me to say thank you so much to Word Burglar for being our special guest today and joining us as we talk about Cobra Commander 1.
Absolute pleasure. Love what you guys do. Thank you. Thank you for keeping this going. And I look forward to hearing more, because I could talk about this for hours and listen to you guys talk about it for hours. You know, it's funny, you know, listening to a podcast, I do listen to you guys a lot. So I hear you guys so much and I'm like, I have all these thoughts. But anyways, just keep it coming, because this is great. And we are in the golden age of new G.I. Joe comics. So it's pretty exciting.
So, Tim, where can people find you when you are not talking to me about G.I. Joe comics?
Video essays from my creative partners and I at our YouTube channel, Atomic Abe Productions. My brick and mortar comic book store in Somerville, Massachusetts is Hub Comics. And I write about G.I. Joe at arealamericanbook.com.
Excellent stuff. You can find more about Talking Joe at the usual places. TalkingJoe.co.uk is the website that has links to all of those places. You can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. We are also on Patreon at patreon.com/TalkingJoe. So a big thanks to all our backers: Richard, Sam, Jay, Bill, Christopher, Justin, Rob, Brian, and Shane, who are all getting early access to episodes as well as some exclusive content. And that is us done for now. But remember that
nobody beats Talking Joe, an international podcast.
Laters.
Within the Himalayas, hidden away is a civilization of bioengineered innovations. I ain't faking, they're a chitinous nation who enjoy dressing up in living crustaceans. They're building installations made from snakeskin with a little bit of caterpillar baked in. I knew a patient who tried escaping, they gave him spores and made his brain vacant.
It's obvious around the Cobra camp, I'm hearing rumors that Galobulus looks like a fine tumor. Humanoid upper body with the crab on his face, serpent's tail coiled like a cobra has it encased in a spear that flies around a magical place. Mountain like fungus sword shoots spores into space. War with that place is suicide, we're not a threat. Heard they have tentacle bombs and catamaran jets.
I don't wanna go to Cobra Law, please don't make me go. You might as well say goodbye when they say hello. Turning into a snake ain't worth the bad pay. Was once a man, I wanna stay that way. Was once a man, I wanna stay.
under the leadership of Globulus. They're making plans that involve de-evolving us.
Bang, helicopter shot down by solid vinaigrette. Telepathic brainwaves, they don't need no internet. Cobra Law Academy, students by design. Psychic motivators plant new ideas in the minds.
And the enforcer can't talk, but makes other noises. He smells like dead stuff and rather enjoys it. Eyeballs in weird places, skin that's see-through. They mind control worms just to eat you.
I heard a jail cell in Cobra Law is a giant clam. Eat you alive, trap you or a dying man. Could you imagine those clams in a giant frying pan? One of them could feed a squadron.
I don't wanna go to Cobra Law. Please don't make me go. You might as well say goodbye when they say hello. Turning into a snake ain't worth the bad pay. Was once a man, I wanna stay that way. Centuries of hypergenetic manipulation leading up to mankind's obliteration. I'm scared they'll recruit me. My college degree is a bachelor of mollusk technology. They got a snake lady called Pythona. Anyone who gets near her dies in a coma. My friend Larry, who drives a